Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin from Beyond the Uniform. My goal is to give active duty military personnel the tools they need to make a successful transition to a civilian career. This week, I'm speaking with Will Granis, who's the Managing Director of Cloud CTO Office at Google. He has had an incredible career, including being the Chief Technology Officer of L3, a company with over 38,000 employees globally. He's also been the founder of a startup that was acquired by Google. He was a senior manager over at Boeing and much more. This is a really fantastic interview. Will does a great job of dissecting his career in the early days of how he made the transition from the Army to the world of tech, how he used his close friends as a network, how he repositioned what he did in terms people would understand. He also talks about great advice on those wanting to pursue graduate degrees, whether to choose an executive MBA program or a traditional MBA program, as well as if that's even necessary inside the world of tech. So I would recommend this for anyone considering tech, but just for anyone in general. Will does a really great job of helping you understand how to make that transition as smooth as possible. And he does it in a very humble way. So here is Will Granis on his career. Awesome, Will. Well, thank you so much for joining me and taking the time out of your schedule to speak about your experience.
Yeah, happy to.
So quick background. So Will was a West Point graduate, distinguished graduate of West Point in 1999. He received his BS in Operations Research, Mathematics, and Systems Engineering. He spent 5 years in artillery and signal intelligence, and when he transitioned out of the Army, went into the telecommunications industry at Comtech Mobile Datacom. After a year there, he spent 6 years at Boeing as a Director of Advanced Information Solutions. While he was there, he also got an MBA from Wharton as a Boeing Fellow. When he left Boeing, he started his own company, What's Next, which was acquired by Google after 3 years, and then went on to be the CTO and SVP of engineering at L3, which is really amazing. L3 is one of the leading providers of broad range of communications and electronic systems and products used by both military and commercial platforms, over 38,000 employees globally. So being in the top of their technology food chain is really impressive. And then went on to Google, first as a director of cloud programs, and then as the managing director of the cloud CTO office. So really excited to dive in and hear more about your experience. And I thought we'd start with just going back to when you were in the Army, at what point you knew you were going to transition and how you approached that decision.
Sure. You know, I can tell you when you list all those things off, it makes me feel really old. So. I need to shorten my profile a little bit. Intact in the next conversation. Yeah, so the Army, I think it goes back to why I joined the Army in the first place, and really West Point in the first place, which is, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't really view West Point as a leading contender for my college experience. And really kind of junior, senior year, I played hockey and I was recruited to play hockey at West Point. And I think the more I got involved with West Point and the closer I got to West Point, really brought out in me a sense of patriotism and duty that I think was there all along, but I didn't realize how strongly it was a part of my fundamental character. And so as I made the decision to go to West Point, I kind of made the decision to, give the Army thing a try, though I had never really viewed it as a career thing. I didn't have a big career aspiration. I just wanted to serve. I wanted to do something meaningful and with purpose. So, my decision for West Point was very much related to my decision of, how I thought about my career in the Army, which was, serve, take it as it comes, and, didn't really have, I would call it a 20-year plan or anything even remotely related to a 20-year plan. It was more of a kind of 2 to 3 year plan. And I think it was about year 4 in the Army when I really started getting a sense of something that I wanted to do in the Army. And that was, I wanted to go to grad school and I wanted to teach. And it just so happens, and I think that veterans will resonate with this, especially, you know, those that, you know, are managing their careers around the same time I was, that is that if you have certain jobs over a certain timeline, it sets you up really well to go to grad school. If you don't have certain jobs in a certain timeline, you kind of miss a window. And I was in the boat that because I had chosen to do some things I really thought were interesting, but not necessarily on a career progression that the military recognized at that time is, you know, a good progression for grad school. You know, that wasn't going to be an option for me. And so when grad school and teaching wasn't an option, that was really when I made my decision to start moving towards a transition out of the military.
Mm. And when you did transition, did you choose to join the reserves, and how did you consider whether to be part of the reserves or not?
So I didn't right away, and there were two reasons for that. One is because I didn't probably know enough about the reserves, and honestly, I didn't spend enough time educating myself. Like at the time when I realized that I wasn't going to be able to do the thing I wanted to do on active duty, something about me is I kind of like to do whatever I'm doing full on. Yeah. And I was full on into the transition into industry, and I had a small, you know, I had a growing family, wife, small daughter, soon to be second one, and I just felt like I couldn't commit to both of them. So lack of awareness of what it really meant, and then to just, you know, throwing myself fully into the transition. Mm. Now, later on, I did, after a couple of years on inactive reserve, I did go back and join the active reserves for a couple of years.
Okay.
You know, I missed, I think, the camaraderie, the sense of purpose, you know, being around it. What's interesting in industry, one of the things I, at least in my limited, you know, circle, has been I'm surrounded by people who aren't necessarily in my year group, whereas in the military, you're surrounded when you're an officer, people around you, your other officers, or they all graduated at the same time you did. And so you're surrounded by people who are sharing life experiences with you kind of at the same time. And in the civilian world, I found that I was usually the youngest person in the room, and that our experiences weren't necessarily as shared, and we didn't have the same kind of foundation in terms of like a life path. Like their kids were older or, you know, already gone, and my kids were really young. And so I think I kind of lost out in those early years. What I felt was missing too, a sense of like peer connection and connection to something bigger than just, you know, transactional business relationships.
Mm. Yeah. I never pieced that together, but that's so true from my experience too, where in the military, you really do have this cohort of people where you're experiencing all these things together and you have so much in common, even from an age standpoint, and you kind of do lose that. It becomes more diverse outside of that.
Yeah.
And so I'm really interested around that first job. So when you chose Comtech Mobile Datacom, actually maybe backing up, for a military audience, how would you describe the telecom industry and what your role was as program manager?
Sure. So, you know, I won't try to describe the entire telecommunications industry because that would go for a long time. I probably bore the very core of your audience and drive, you know, readership away, and I would feel horrible about doing that to you.
Yeah.
So what I'll instead do is I'll focus very on the niche that we participated in, which was very much mobile satellite telecommunications. And so if you think about at the time, this was 2004-ish. At the time, the military was conducting operations worldwide. You know, some of the events in the Middle East were spinning up quite a bit. And what we found was that as a military, we're outpacing our traditional communications methods, right? And so you can only set up so many people on so many hills to, you know, retransmit signals before it gets kind of tedious. And so it was an interesting convergence of, there was a really big need in the military, and there was this company, Comtech Mobile Datacom, that had just come up with a small satellite transceiver, which is basically the box that sends signals and receives signals from satellites. And it was really the only mobile satellite solution available to a wide part of the fleet at the time, started in the logistics side and then ended up more in the operational army. It was ended up calling, was named Blue Force Tracking, which might resonate with a lot of people who are, you know, out there in the audience who've, you know, used it, heard it. It's still a very active program today. And so my transition from the military was, you know, going from, you know, a role where I was kind of artillery changed a little bit too while I was there, and it was becoming more effects-based operations, so a lot more digital, many more digital systems to orchestrate. And so that background was kind of a natural transition into that program. And as program manager at Comtech Mobile Datacom, what I did was I led the deployment of Blue Force tracking, you know, as a civilian out into much broader distribution and a much higher user base. And it really grew fast. So I was kind of lucky on timing, but there was relevance between my military role and the civilian role that I had.
And I'm just curious, like what were you considering when you were just getting out of the military? How did you even start to research what the possibilities were and just putting yourself back in those shoes? How did you even approach that?
I was so bad at it. I mean, I would love to say that, like, looking back, it's always easy to like go back and say, you know, I had it all figured out and here are the three keys to victory.
Yeah.
And the truth is I was a mess. Like it was the last year in the military. I was feeling really mixed emotions. And luckily I got some, you know, kind of luck intervened a little bit in that, I felt really strongly that I should talk to my family and their connections about, you know, my decision to leave the military and also ask for help, which was not, it's not an easy thing. Doesn't come naturally to me. And maybe, you know, some other people who are listening to this, they go, yeah, maybe me too, because asking for help sometimes, you know, to some people implies weakness. And I think that if there's one thing that I did that was semi-smart, it was realizing that I wasn't going to be able to do it on my own. And I asked for help from those who were closest to me, who had the most vested interest in my success. Because, you know, like social networks and kind of moving your way through, you know, like LinkedIn or Facebook or, I mean, that's okay. But you make really, really start, like if you can have a base of people who are really close to you, who have a very personal connection to you, and then they can go out to their networks and kind of be your advocate on your behalf. I found that that was really powerful. That's actually how I landed this role. Was my father-in-law, you know, he was talking to one of his old army buddies, and you know, just mentioned the fact offhand that I was, you know, leaving the military, and that person asked what I was doing, and then it turned into, you know, a couple interviews and a role. So there's any, you know, like anything that I can point to that was really helpful. One was activating that network, specifically activating it, not like, you know, in a kind of inactive way where I just kind of let, or passive way, like just letting it happen, but being very diligent to let people know that I was looking and that, you know, here's my background. I think the second thing that I didn't do super well at the time, but I've become better at and it's helped me a lot over time, is also having the elevator pitch about, you know, what I'd be good at, or, you know, what I was looking for and what I was good at in a consumable form. For someone who knew nothing about me, you know, what are the three lines that my father-in-law was going to say to that person to describe my background? And I didn't really focus that as much as I should have early on. And so that, that's super critical. And now that I've hired probably thousands of people, you know, over the last 15 years, I know how important it is to get that first soundbite, because of the way humans categorize other humans, you know, it's so important.
Yeah.
that first soundbite is really, really precise.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think of it in terms of emails as well, of like doing the work for the person. Like, what is the three sentences that if someone forwards this email, they can instantly get it? Just because, like, I think people in general want to help, but people are busy and it's hard to go through all the noise and figure out exactly what's going on. And you've got 5 seconds of someone's attention to catch it. And so honing that couple sentence or couple, you know, words really well, I agree, that makes a big difference.
And it's important. It's important, I think, just to the person themselves too, to really reflect on that, because you know, you can go and figure out how to write really great resumes and, you know, you'll get all of the, hey, you know, if you're in artillery, that translates to this. Unfortunately, artillery is not a great choice because we don't get to blow stuff up in the civilian world as much, maybe construction, but, you know, it's a little bit dodgy. But, you know, all of those tips won't solve that core fact that you really have to, you know, I believe that self-reflection and being honest with yourself about really kind of what you want and what you're good at blended into that tiny little space is the value of doing that isn't that you get the blur, but you also learn a lot about yourself. And it certainly has proven that way for me.
I agree. And then I was curious about what the day-to-day life looked like, especially around just kind of for that year, what the hours were like, how much you were traveling, what size team you were working with, and just painting that picture of what that immediate post-military life was like.
Yeah. So Comtech Mobile Data Comp, being a small company, was a little bit different than maybe if someone was doing a transition to a much larger company. And so I'll preface this by saying, you know, this is what small company life felt like first year out of the military. And that was that I was kind of handed this role and then, you know, like, go do it. And there wasn't a lot of, now this is exactly what you need to do, which is exactly the opposite of the military that has, you know, SOPs and TTPs. And if, you know, sorry for all the acronyms, but this audience, I get away with it. You know, they really structure, you know, what you need to know and how you need to know it and how fast you need to do things. And it wasn't that case my first year at Comtech, which actually I think helped me learn a lot faster. And so a typical day at Comtech would be, you know, I would wake up probably, so this will be funny. So for all of the, you know, maybe some light in, you know, in industry, if anybody's thinking about making a transition, you know, like, you get to choose the time you wake up. So I was still kind of an early riser, I guess, maybe like, you know, 5:45, 6 o'clock, and try to get some exercise in, because that's a great habit that's kind of spilled over from the military. And then, you know, spend a little time at home, head into the office, typically, you know, a meeting first thing in the morning to kick things off, and then a lot of time with customers, and a lot of time with the technical development teams, making sure I understood exactly what we were building, why it was valuable. And then, and again, you know, I'm coming from a position where everybody around me, it's like when you're a second lieutenant, everyone around me knows infinitely more than I do about everything. So the first 6 months were literally just jumping in kind of head first and learning the technical aspects of the product, the what customers were looking for, where they were frustrated, and then trying to find some early wins. I think that first year was about, you know, we had some big contracts that were up for bid. We had, over the course of that year, we had a product malfunction, you know, defect that I had to jump in and fix. But on a day-to-day basis, it felt, any, you know, it would be like standard meetings. It would feel very much like, you know, a military, you know, meeting formation, staff meeting, depending on, you know, the experience of the people on the that are listening, you know, they may resonate with one or all of those. And then really just learning. And I was very fortunate that the person that hired me realized that I had a learning curve, but I was reading telecommunications books at night. Like, I literally had Telecommunications for Dummies. This is not a made up thing. I actually probably still have that book in my shelf somewhere in long-term storage, because I've moved a lot. But just like learning how, you know, RF energy is like directed and what is in it and how, you know, digital signal processors work. And it was just like the learning curve was huge. And then, you know, applying that real time was really rewarding. So, you know, I'd just crash. And then, you know, to learn, and then I would get to apply it on a daily basis. And I think that that's one attribute of a smaller company. A lot of veterans that I talk to, they ask, like, what are you really thankful for in terms of your experience? And one of them is that I was able to go work at a small company first, because I think it really, it tuned me to a way of behavior and learning and like rapid implementation and kind of, you know, try real hard, maybe you fail, adjust, try real, you know, hard, and then maybe you succeed, you know, in iteration two or three. I think that model works really, really well in fast-paced dynamic environments like tech.
That's so interesting, because I would have assumed a larger company would have like the more established training regimens and more structure that might suit the military well. But when you say that, it does make me realize, like, yeah, in that small environment, you're getting exposure to everything. You've got so much more individual attention. And I love that thought of, in that program manager role, when you're interfacing with the tech side, when you're interfacing with the customer side, you're literally touching on all the different facets that make the business run. And that would be such an incredible way, a hands-on way to learn.
Yeah. You know, in business, you know, I'll oversimplify, and so forgive me, but, you know, in business, there's kind of like two functions. There's the people who build the stuff, and then there's the people who sell the stuff. And if you focus on customers and focus on the product, you learn all of the other things like contracts, QA, and that's why I think that small companies are always, if if it matches, you know, a person's interests, their abilities, like you have access to it, I'm biased, obviously, but I would definitely recommend that people who are making the transition strongly consider small companies as their first role, because for people who are self-motivated, curious, you know, aggressive, they'll do really, really well in small companies, and you could potentially have disproportionate impact compared to, you know, like plugging into, and I worked at one, so I know this, you know, plugging into like a big military industrial complex, you know, company, you do get much more structured training. There are many more people, you know, like you. It feels safe. It, you know, the benefits are more well-defined. Like, you know, it's not as like, oh my gosh, we got to get our Series B funding or we're toast. But I just think the learning curve's, you know, abridged a little bit in the small company. And, you know, really, it is one of the reasons I think that my career for, you know, has really moved fast through, you know, the tech industry as well as kind of different functions.
Mm-hmm. And I was also curious to learn about when you first made that transition, you know, in the first, let's say, 3 years or so, where did you feel like you had a competitive advantage from the military? And also, where did you feel like you most had to catch up, or where were you most behind coming from the military?
So, let's see, advantage. I'm not sure I had many advantages. I mean, just candidly speaking, I think maybe brute force and ignorance, you know, was kind of my calling card. Now, probably just a really strong work ethic, and I kind of approached it as, I will just admit that I don't know as much as all of you, but I am going to work my tail off to catch up. And I also think being very people-centric helps in business. It doesn't matter if you're leading an engineering team or working with a customer. You know, people who buy stuff, they don't buy the stuff. They buy, you know, the relationship that they have with the people who are selling it. And, you know, the teams that go above and beyond and create breakthroughs are usually supported and empowered by people who, you know, are really focused on their development and inspiring them and removing roadblocks. And so I think that a lot of the fundamental leadership skills, maybe those helped. I think clearly areas where I was deficient were, you know, technical depth. You know, people who had electrical engineering degrees and had spent, you know, 10 to 15 years developing, you know, silicon definitely knew more about me or more about the product than I did and probably still do. And then, you know, finance was probably the other one. And that was later on, that was really what drove me to look for an MBA, specifically at Wharton, because, you know, their brand around, you know, like quantitative finance and banking is really, really strong. And that was always an area where I felt like I just didn't even speak the language.
Mm. I love that. I was also curious about with, it's just always interesting, like, what the biggest surprise was when you got out of the military, because I'm sure you had different thoughts of what it would be like. And I think it's always helpful for people to hear of what you didn't know that you didn't know, or what was the biggest contrast when you did get out.
Yeah, I think it's counterintuitive, and it maybe even feels a little weird. And even today, maybe feels a little weird to me, but I wish I would have known how to better market myself. Mm-hmm. And kind of establish a personal brand. I think we, you know, in the military, you spend so much time identifying with the unit that you're in, the branch that you're in, you know, the Army, the United States, Freedom, that you kind of, you don't really have, like, your personal brand isn't as important. And what I found with potential employers, peers, is that in the military, you don't need that brand because everybody understands what you do, because there's a very rigid, like, oh, you're in artillery, so you do this. Oh, you're a forward observer, you do that. Oh, you're in the fire direction center, like, oh, you do this. And they're, the standards are well known. The job roles are very well defined. There's, like, definitions of everything. And then when you get out, like, no one knows what to think of you. Mm-hmm. And there aren't these standard, like, oh, you're a program manager. Well, there are, like, a zillion flavors of program manager. Like, what do you actually do? Or what are you bringing to the table? And so, what I wish I had known then, and one of the things I've tried to catch up on over time, and I would seriously, you know, consider doing a little bit of the self-reflection I mentioned a little bit earlier, but, you know, very early on, making sure that you have some sense of what makes you special or important or useful, to other people, and making sure that what you do, you know, you feel good about the brand that you're building, that you're sharing with others, because that is something that, you know, you, if you purposefully influence it and shape it, can be very powerful. If you let other people kind of define it for you, it could be great, or it could be really scary, or it could be non-existent.
Yeah, that piece of identity is really interesting. I hadn't thought of it in that way, which you do identify a lot with your group or in subgroup, and there is, it's just so clear. It's such a black and white world of what, who does what and what their role is, and you know from the acronym so much about them, and then being able to transition to more of a personal identity and start to establish what you want your civilian career identity to look like. I think that's really interesting to think about.
Yeah.
So how did you manage that transition to Boeing then? So after a year, you made that leap over there. How did you think about making that move, and what was that transition like?
So there were a couple reasons behind it. One reason, which is, no matter what anyone says, to other people, it always does matter, like where you're located, your family situation, things like that. Things that we don't necessarily like to admit to ourselves are big parts of our decision criteria. So that was a big part for me. Seattle, my wife, and her family's from there. We were raising small kids at the time. We were on the East Coast. We felt pretty disconnected, from the family out there. There was just a really interesting opportunity. And it got me more into the technical side that I was finding more interesting at the time. And so, but I also took a major career hit to go there. Like I was leading this program that was like the preeminent technical program in the Army at the time. It was super successful and useful. And then I went and I became like a level, like just out of college intern level role at this massive, global company. And it was largely centered around family and getting close to work that I thought was interesting. But I purposely made the decision to take a hit on level and take a hit on prestige and take a hit on that to do something that was important to me in other areas.
That's actually been a common theme, surprisingly, of a lot of people who are making that decision to roll up their sleeves, maybe take a step back, have a peer set that's less... has less years of experience and is younger, but to get their foot in the door and to your point earlier about work ethic and just the ability to get things done, you're able then to prove yourself and move up through the ranks more rapidly. But I imagine that does take some sense of humility to kind of let go of that and be, go from, because you were an 03 when you got out. And so you go from this level of stature and then you're down with, college graduates or people younger, but it did seem to pay off in the long run.
No, I had a great time. And, it actually, what's fascinating is at the time, I didn't know, this is not why I made the decision, but, I was sitting on the floor in the cube farm, right? Like the Matrix, right? We're all plugged in and like, whacking away at software. And then, right next to me, I ended up overhearing a conversation that would change my entire career. And that is that Boeing at the time was looking to create a mobile satellite capability.
Well,
they had just invested a ton of money in this thing called Connection by Boeing, which was a global satellite system. And they were looking to figure out how to get it to ground forces and the Army. And I was, so based on my earlier roll-ups, I kind of stuck my head up like a little field mouse. And I overheard this conversation. I just kind of leaned over. I said, hey, I have a little bit of background there. If there's anything I can ever do to help, let me know. And, of course, big company, they ignored me, for like 2 or 3 months. And then I popped my head up again, like a little field mouse. They go, hey, I really think I could help you. Do you want me to make a call to the government program manager that you're trying to get a meeting with? Because I know them really well. And they're like, okay, maybe we should take you seriously. And, after that, it really, after that, my career in Boeing just kind of shot like a rocket up. So I went from being like a, level one, engineer on the floor to became the program manager within like 6 months of that. And then became, a director, leader of a much larger business and much bigger engineering and operations team. And then ended up leading like all of advanced research and development, anything having to do with information systems for Phantom Works.
Wow.
In 4 or 5 years. So Just goes, one, why I love open office areas. And two, it just goes to show you, like, you have no idea how putting yourself in a position where, you know, you enjoy what you do and you, you know, are really interested in the work can lead to opportunities that you would never see coming. And just being willing to volunteer to help.
I love that. It's so wild because so many people have such a structured approach to career, and it's networking, and it's about planning every lily pad out that you're going to hop from one to another. And then something so random like that. And you know, like you said, you were doing a job that you liked, and you also had the initiative to make yourself available. So I think you played a more active role in it than one might think, but it's still that the circumstances were so random and outside of your control.
You know, that's every major move in my career has been like that. Mm. And so I kind of joke with my wife that part of it is a lot of hard work and preparation. And part of it is just being open to possibilities that you weren't, like, having a really open mind. Because on the surface, moving from a really prestigious job and one that was like, you know, I had equity investment and things were going like really well like at Comtech. And then to go from that to Boeing seemed counterintuitive at the time. But I found that following what I thought was the right thing to do and then, you know, working hard and preparing myself and then being willing to jump in when an opportunity presented itself, even if I wasn't exactly sure how it was going to work out. So trusting my instincts has also been a big part of every major career move.
Oh, man. Yeah, I agree. I wish I knew more about that subject, but I'm starting to realize more and more how much that gut feel and how much instinct matters, and being able to listen to yourself and the self-knowledge that you've talked about several times of just knowing what you want to do. And I love what you said about just being open, because these, you know, these career paths can take so many different lives, and just being open to whatever they may be.
A lot of people have disagreed with choices that I've made too, you know, in my circle. I try to get a lot of feedback from people that I trust. But people thought I was kind of crazy to go to Boeing. People thought I was kind of crazy to start my own company. People thought I was crazy to, you know, take a really great career at L3 and, you know, head to Google. And so I think a lot of that self-reflection, that kind of, you know, you understand, the more you can understand yourself and what drives you, the more open you can be and the more, you know, resilient you can be to making decisions that may seem counterintuitive.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And one of the things I wanted to dig into before we run out of time is, so while you were there, you made the decision that you already talked about earlier to buff up on your finance skills to pursue that MBA. I wanted to learn more about that, how you managed that while working and kind of what that process was like.
Sure. Well, it was a nightmare at the beginning because I didn't realize when I was applying to go to Wharton, I didn't realize I would be changing jobs at the exact same time that I got accepted to school. So I was a program manager. I was leading a pretty significant business. You know, all the stuff about the mobile satellite stuff had been coming true. We built it. Customers loved it. We were, you know, deploying. It was turning into a real business. So I was all over the place all the time. And then, you know, I figured that wasn't crazy enough. With two small daughters at home as well, I decided, hey, let's go for an MBA as well. But it was at the right time because I was starting to get into more general management roles, and finance was such a huge part of the decision-making process. So, you know, I applied not knowing that I was going to get a phone call. So I'd gotten approved to go to Wharton. I knew I was going to have to do an executive MBA because I wanted to keep rolling on my career. But even that was a huge commitment. It was, you know, 2 to 3 days a week at Wharton in Pennsylvania. I was living in Seattle at the time. Again, questionable decision making.
So you would fly weekly. You would fly.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I would fly back and forth, and you know, I would do like homework on the plane, or I would do like briefings on the plane, like the whole thing. Like time management ends up being really important, and also the fact that I really wanted to do it. Like I had to really want to do it. But that was a very difficult time, time wise. So going back and forth, I decided I wanted to do it in Pennsylvania. They had a campus in San Francisco, but Pennsylvania was where all the investment bankers and other people went high finance, and that's really what I wanted. And then I got a role that basically increased my scope by like 400 times, and that was my first real executive job at Boeing at the exact same time. So I was going to school and ramping into a new job. And then I moved from Seattle to Virginia while I was doing all of that. So yeah, it was a pretty hectic 2 years, but also You know, I'm the type of person that being overloaded is kind of good for me.
Yeah.
And really, I think, developed me very quickly. And Boeing was taking a huge chance on me because at the time, I think I was like 29 or something. And they'd just given me a huge executive job to lead a major part of the business. And so, you know, because I was open to being buried, you know, working my way out of the hole, you know, I got two really amazing opportunities at the same time.
I bet while it was a lot to handle schedule-wise, one of the advantages was you were able in this new, very high-profile job to apply all of these things that would have otherwise been theoretical. You were able to kind of squeeze out even more value from these classes by having real-world things to apply them to.
Yeah, I think that's one real big advantage of like an executive MBA is that, you know, I was learning about the balance sheet, income statement of cash flows, and then I would go back to work and we were talking about, you know, like our cost basis for the services we were providing, and I could actually understand like why that would be important and tying it back to, you know, how these things rolled up to financial reporting. And so I could operate at a level that very few of my peers could, and the timing was fantastic. And it made me worry less about like the degree and the grades I was getting at school. Yeah. It made me really, I think, extract the value out of that course. And I ended up also focusing a little bit more on entrepreneurship while I was at Wharton. And that helped later on, you know, start my company.
And you had said before we jumped on the interview, just kind of thoughts on business school in general. I'm wondering, for someone getting out of the military, how would you advise them to think about whether to do grad school or an MBA in particular? And then if they do that, whether to do an MBA or an executive program or full-time?
Well, I'm super biased, so hopefully they'll take my, you know, spiel and compare it to the spiel of others on your series. And that is that I would highly recommend getting some industry experience before deciding to get an MBA.
Yep.
And I think it makes the education more relevant if you choose to do it. I think what you really want is that first the hardest thing is the first transition. And I'm not sure getting an MBA actually makes that easier. Mm-hmm. I was just talking to an MBA intern here at Google 2 days ago, who's a veteran. And, you know, it's really challenging without having something to grab onto that's like practical work experience that looks and feels and smells like, you know, tech in his case, to make the transition. In an MBA, you know, in tech, like in our world of Silicon Valley, MBAs are typically for finance, business, or sales, not in tech. So if you want to be on the engineering or technical side, like you actually don't want to target an MBA, maybe even at all. So I would definitely look at real world experience first. If you do decide to get an MBA, it's so situational dependent. I mean, then, you know, do you have a family? You know, what's that situation like? Where do you want to live? That changes the programs that you might choose. I got a lot of benefit out of an executive program because it matched up with a role it utilized that education really well. So practical work experience would be my first bias before deciding on an MBA. And then there's timing of like how long your benefits are good for to go get an MBA. And that's something that individuals have to, I think, do the math on themselves.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I went straight from the Navy to business school, and so much of the first 6 months even was just learning a whole new language that had I been exposed to any industry, I would have been a little bit more conversant on functional roles and industries and types of jobs and just the basics that, you know, it's such a high price point per day of school at an MBA program. I was using it to take care of some really easy stuff that could have been learned on the job somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I know we're just about out of time, so I guess maybe just a catch-all would be for anyone who's on active duty thinking of making the transition, any other advice you would give them or resources you think they should look at or other things that might help them make the best transition possible?
Yeah. Well, first, ask for help from those that are really close to you. I mentioned a little bit earlier, but probably the single biggest, you know, catalyst for any transition, successful transition I had was that people knew I was transitioning and they cared about me and they were willing to be my advocates on my behalf, because you just think about like network graphs, right? You only know a certain number of people, but if you can get 10 people or 15 people activated on your behalf, it grows exponentially really quickly. So one is like we probably were all successful in the military when we were like, you know, the go-to person, and you know, we didn't necessarily need to ask for help. But asking for help explicitly is not a bad thing to do in the transition. I guess two, you know, I'm not a big fan of like there's a perfect resume type or there's a perfect way to do applications. As a hiring manager of thousands of people, and I look at a lot of resumes, you know, if you know, this is very tactical, but if you're going to go after a position, tailor your experience to the position, not what you think is a general broad set of categories that you throw at every position that you might be interested in. Because that level of diligence will also tell you, give you pretty clear signal whether that's a good fit for you or not. I've gone so far as to take, like, with veterans, I've taken, like, here's the job that you're looking at, here's your experience, and we literally, like, make a matrix, and we say, like, let's pull out all the words, the key phrases from, you know, the job posting, let's take, you know, key things that you've done, and let's match them up, and let's find the areas that are weak, and let's talk about how we're going to do that, and then we kind of go back to a very focused narrative, you know, and unfortunately for a lot of veterans, you know, the, and I was in the same boat, it's going to look and feel very militaristic, right? And so depending on which area, which business area you're interested in, you may want to emphasize or de-emphasize the military aspect of it. You know, there, so for example, tech is still working through how to bring veterans into tech more effectively, whereas manufacturing or retail or other places where veterans logistics have had huge impact already, and it's kind of more well understood how they can be impactful. You don't need to soften the language around the military or kind of tune the words that you use as much.
I love that, because you're on the resume level, you're spoon feeding people to tell your experience in the terms that they'll understand and value, and you're doing the heavy lifting for them. But when you know, you probably looking through resumes, you probably spend less than 30 seconds a resume. You just got so little time to get the gist of it. And so those little words jumping out, I can imagine that makes a big difference.
Yeah, by the time it gets to me, like, you know, 5 to 10 other people have already looked at it too, right? And so you can imagine that the triage is like you get 20 to 30 seconds times 10 people, and the chance of making it through is so small, especially at a place like Google, that if I literally just rejected candidates because they didn't update a resume.
Yeah.
Like I could tell, and it was, you know, that level of commitment shines through in other areas. So little things matter.
Yeah. Well, this is great. I know we just kind of dipped on the tip of the iceberg here, but I imagine for people who are making that transition, these earlier years are the ones that they're really thinking about. And it's incredible to see, you know, even beyond this, what you've gone on to accomplish. And so I appreciate your advice on all of this.
Yeah. It's my pleasure. And, you know, if you ever want to follow up and we can talk a little bit more, I'm happy to do so.
Part two. Awesome.
Yeah, part two. We'll see how this one does with your followers.
Nice.
Surface.
All right, that's all for this week. A couple quick admin items. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, there are show notes for anything that Will mentioned that's linkable. I'll have a link there to save you the time. Also, other great interviews at beyondtheuniform.io, trying to cover as many different industries, functional roles, company sizes, and backgrounds as possible to give you those role models and just examples of what other veterans have gone on to do. If you have any feedback, suggestions, comments, questions, feel free to contact me at beyondtheuniform.io/ping. Thanks, and have a great week.